Good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, here in Portland, Oregon, USA. My name is Andrew Geller, and this morning we're going to be looking at the topic of liquefied natural gas, as well as proposals to site new facilities along the Oregon coast. And there's proposals in different stages for four facilities. My guest this morning is Tim Riley. He is a consumer protection advocate and personal injury lawyer, but he's also the producer of a new film that has been nominated for Best Documentary in the Malibu Film Festival last year. It's called The Risks and Dangers of LNG. Welcome to our airwaves, Tim.
Yeah, good morning, Andrew. My pleasure.
Just so people know, we're only going to be referring to liquefied natural gas from here forward as LNG, just because it saves a little bit of time and it's just referenced that way through most of the web links and documents people can find regarding the topic. For people who don't know what liquefied natural gas or LNG is, it's natural gas. It's methane, CH4. However, it is chilled to 259 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, and then packed at incredibly high pressures into massive tankers about 1,000 feet in length or longer than 3 football fields end to end. And then it is shipped around on these tankers. There are needs for specialized terminal facilities at the export point and the import point. There are a few in the United States, mostly in the northeastern U.S. and along the Gulf Coast. I guess there's one down California way, sort of more towards where you are, Tim.
No, there's none on the West Coast.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at a different number.
It could be a proposal.
It is. As someone who has produced a film about this, I'm curious where your interest in LNG came from. What made you want to produce this film?
Well, we live in an area on the coast between Malibu and Santa Barbara, and we received a letter in the mail, a very slick brochure. You can tell it was quite an expensive advertisement, and it was addressed to myself, calling me a quote-unquote community leader, and showing me this proposal brochure-like. It had, I believe, like seals swimming around this industrial complex, and they were making it seem like this is going to be the greatest thing that ever happened to our area. So naturally, it smelled a little fishy to me. So I did a little research, and once I found out all the horrifying things I learned, I felt it was, my duty to get the information out to other people. So we really wanted to alert that the British were coming, in essence, because there are so many things that people don't know about LNG that we felt we had to ring the alarm bell and be the center for information. We also know that they tried bringing a facility here, in our area in the 1970s, 77 to be exact, and our city council had done a formal environmental impact report, and the scientists at that point determined that if there were an accident 7 miles off our shore, they came up with different risk scenarios. And since we have ports around here, and they want to know if there were a collision with an LNG tanker in the traffic passing lane, which is about 7 miles off the shore, what would happen? And they determined that because the liquefied natural gas is, as you mentioned, it's condensed. It's basically 600 gallons of natural gas that when it's cooled, it becomes 1 gallon of liquefied natural gas. But if the container is breached, then it immediately expands into the atmosphere and becomes its natural state again. And because of the unbelievable volumes of gas that would come out of the tanker, they determined that it would billow and drift 30 miles, and that if there was any kind of spark, even from a spark plug and today a cell phone, attic fan, etc., it would set off an inferno that would incinerate everything within the 30-mile stretch of the plume. So there were varying degrees of how far that plume would extend based on different models. According to the federal government's models at that time, they said it would go 76 miles. The Coast Guard said it could go 28 miles if just four of the five tanks breached, where the scientists for the city said if all five breached, it would go 30 miles. So there's, and the energy company said, oh, no, the plume would only go 1.2 miles. Since the 70s, I'm sad to report to you, there still has never been an on-the-water large LNG spill. Well, so people still don't know exactly how far they will go. There have been other studies that have been done recently for the FERC and the Energy Department, and they always disclaim in those reports that we've never tested a large spill, that we're using computer models, that they are inconsistent, and they've always recommended that large spills be conducted, but yet they have not.
Now, for folks who are thinking that this is all kind of coming out of nowhere, you had referenced the early 70s, but let me give a little more history about liquefied natural gas here in the States. It was 1914 when the first U.S. patent was awarded to handle and ship LNG. The first commercial natural gas liquefaction plant was built in West Virginia in 1917. And then I guess the next significant event related to liquefied natural gas was an explosion at a storage tank in Cleveland in 1944, where I found some different figures, but it more or less incinerated a square mile of Cleveland.
Yeah. One of the reasons why we in America, unless you're being impacted directly by an LNG proposal, most people, even like the in the middle of the country, never even heard of LNG. Mm-hmm. And people on the coasts never really heard of LNG or liquefied natural gas, probably until about 2 years ago or so. The only people who really know about it are the people in the Cleveland area. And that's because it was the first commercial LNG facility in the country. What happened was there was one of the holding tanks had a breach, and the contents leaked into the streets and sewers. And as soon as LNG hits the atmosphere, it instantly vaporizes and becomes its natural gas state. And a cloud plume was created. It ignited, and it incinerated 1 square mile. And what people have to realize is that the heat of one of these kinds of fire plumes is so intense, the temperatures get up to around 3,000 degrees. And many people, and I've seen interviews of people, there was a 60 Minutes program done back in the 70s relating to our proposal in Oxnard. They did a very, very nice piece. I hope that Mike Wallace would do it again today. But he even interviewed people in Cleveland back then, and they were completely burned, and they were nowhere near the fire. The radiant heat is so intense that people probably 1 mile away from the actual flames itself will be burned.
Yeah, I mean, in reading about this and the accidents and the potential for accident with an explosion, it basically sounds like what the Pentagon terms a fuel air bomb, where basically a vapor of ignitable fuel is cast out and a spark is lit, and it basically incinerates everything. And it's a tactical military weapon that the United States is currently using across Asia. And here there's discussion of citing many more facilities in the U.S. To supposedly provide, you know, energy stability. Never mind the fact that it continues import dependency, because we're not getting this stuff domestically. The entire point of liquefied natural gas is to transport it from country to country via ships.
Andrew, what happened after the Cleveland disaster, all LNG was shut down in the United States for over 20 years. As a matter of fact, in the 70s, when they made that proposal here in California, and when the scientists determined how bad it could be, laws were put on the books in California. And there was also an accident in a storage facility in Staten Island where 44 people were killed there. And New York also had a law outlawing any LNG coming into the state. But because it became a non-issue, because we weren't pursuing LNG anymore, those laws fell off the books. They were like sunset laws that if you don't renew them, they disappear off the books. So the California law disappeared, the New York law disappeared, and what happened in the 70s was similar to what's happening now. They claimed, we'll never make it through the 80s. We're running out of natural gas. We have peaked. It's made its plateau. It's declining. And we will never make it through 1980s, and there's going to be like a million people unemployed. So they were calling for doom and gloom and fear-mongering and scaring people into, oh, wait till you get your energy bills in Christmas time, etc. So basically, because of that, they built four facilities back in the 70s. And when the gas prices immediately came back down, three of those facilities shut down. So since they were originally built, only one of the facilities has been continually running. One of the facilities had a minor explosion inside and killed somebody. So they had shut them each down for different intermittent safety reasons. But primarily they were shut down because of economics. See, you got to understand, LNG is not feasible or profitable unless they can charge a certain amount of money for the final product, because it's a tremendous investment. It's at least, it's close to $1 billion for the liquefaction facility in the foreign country. It's close to $1 billion, $750 million, $500 million. The prices range on how they want, how safe they want to make the facility for the regasification facility. Each of those boats are around $250 to $300 million. So there's a tremendous initial investment. And back then, in the 70s, they knew they couldn't profit unless gas was $4 per unit or more. And traditionally, gas is around $2, $2.50 per unit. So as soon as it went up to around $4, they kept it there for a while, but we realized we did have plenty of natural gas. It was just nothing but hoopla to get these LNG facilities in. There was plenty of natural gas around. Prices came down. It went down below $4, and it was not profitable for them to run these facilities. And why I'm talking about this now is because those who think that LNG is somehow going to bring our prices down are in for a very sad happening. We are not going to get low prices. If the LNG comes in, we will be locked into high prices forever.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO Radio, Portland, Oregon. My guest is Tim Riley. He is the producer of a film, The Risks and Dangers of LNG, and he runs a large website related to liquefied natural gas. It's online at www.lngdanger.com. And the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm has links to those sites as well as many, many more related to liquefied natural gas. Now, it's ironic that you just referenced short-term price spikes with natural gas and fear about supply as justification almost 30 years ago to get facilities sited, because, well,
they took the script right out of the 70s.
Yeah, the natural gas spot prices set a new record just a day or so back, and they're talking about doing rolling blackouts across the Northeast and kind of the eastern third of the U.S. if necessary, but the Northeast more likely just because it's colder in the winter there. And I'm curious if you feel like I don't know how markets function in that way, but I imagine that markets could be manipulated to boost prices to make it more profitable to do projects that at a cheaper price wouldn't be profitable. So you get the thing built and then you're stuck with it, sort of like nuclear power 40, 35, 50 years ago.
That's right. We all remember the prelude to entering Iraq. We were inundated, very orchestrated, very thorough press, etc., about how there are weapons of mass destruction. You know, we can call that a form of fear-mongering. And people were concerned. And it gave people the rationale to go into Iraq. So we know how fear works. And I believe the people in the energy industry certainly are very organized, and I think that if we review what has happened over the last few years, there is a form of orchestration that we notice most. For example, Memorial Day, check out your gas prices at the pump. You know, 4th of July, check out Labor Day, check out your gas prices. Hmm. So we see a kind of waltz where they'll bring them up, they'll make a killing profit for a couple weeks or a couple months, and, oh, well, we still have some more, and then it comes back down. So there's a waltzing going on. Actually, it's probably more of a rumble than a waltz. We in California were exposed to market manipulation, as I'm sure you're aware of, all the criminal penalties, mm-hmm. which have included imprisonment and fines. And what I find unbelievable is even in the press, they'll always talk about, oh, we have to avoid that energy shortage that we already experienced. And when you read almost any LNG promotional material or article about it, they always have the same, like, buzzwords and paragraphs. Oh, we, you know, we want to avoid the energy shortages of the past. And they never talk about, or people forget, that that was a completely manipulated energy crisis, manufactured by the energy companies and the energy investors. And so that's glossed over. And then the next thing they'll go on about is how, oh, there's been like 30,000 voyages without an accident. Until my wife and I, my wife Hayden has completely helped me with the website and our film and all our endeavors. We've dedicated probably almost exclusively for the last 3 years on warning everyone around LNG. We've been brought in as experts to the Bahamas to meet with government officials on behalf of locals there. Our film is shown. We license our film to city councilmen, et cetera, to show at public forums, but they do have to have licensing. And we've been asked to speak in many places. So as you can imagine, we have been focused on this for a long time. And we see tendencies on how they approach local communities, and we see how they gloss over certain facts. Until my wife and I started this, they never even mentioned Cleveland disaster. But I have put it so because it's you see the pictures of the Cleveland disaster in our film. And when you look at it, you will see that it looks like Hiroshima after the bomb.
I was comparing that with folks in the newsroom here this morning who I showed these photos to, and they said it looks like Dresden after the firebombing.
Exactly. And now, because we have made it so in the forefront that it exists, now they try to do spin and talk about, oh, well, that was back in the 40s. We have better technology now. But before we put that out to the forefront, they wouldn't even talk about it. It was like it didn't exist until we exposed it. And we see this again and again. For example, they talk about how pristine their safety history is in terms of shipping. Well, for example, people don't realize that there was an actual collision between a United States nuclear attack sub and an LNG carrier off the Rock of Gibraltar in the last 2 years. Now, no one talked about that. I brought it out because it was just for some reason it did not get a lot of play, but there was a CNN announcement of it. But here, what happened, and you know when you do your environmental impact reports, mm-hmm. your EIS, well, in the one here in the Oxnard area, they, in their draft, used that incident as an example of how safe the carriers were because they said even though it had a collision, no, nothing escaped. No gas, no LNG escaped.
I got one phrase to respond to that.
Well, before you do, save it, Andrew, okay. Here's the catch. And they already knew about this because I reported it to them, and here, and they knew it, the LNG had already been unloaded before the collision. In my response to that draft, I said, either two things have happened here. Either you are incompetent to not know that after I've already put it to you, or you are intentionally misrepresenting and using this as an example to mislead and minimize the scope of the actual hazards. How dare you use this as an example of safety because nothing escaped when you knew or you should have known, there was no LNG even on the tanker.
Well, and another thing that the industry likes to talk about is the safety of double-hulled ships. And my response to that is USS Cole.
Exactly. And well, you know, that's a military ship, which has a little bit of a different kind of hull. But to be specific, there is an actual double hull, which is the French oil tanker Limburg, which we also show in our film. That was an official double hull. And both, as you mentioned, the U.S. Cole, which is a military ironclad ship,
right?
And this double hull commercial vulnerable sitting duck oil tanker were both penetrated and exploded open by an innocuous weapon such as some ammunition on a little boat, a little dinghy.
Tim, we're rapidly running out of time here, and I want to reference some of the Oregon-specific information towards the very end here. But just real briefly, can you tell us about the explosion that happened a couple days ago in New Jersey on a gas pipeline?
Yeah, apparently there was a commercial activity construction going on, and they just pinched off just a normal gas line, and that exploded an entire apartment building, and 30 people are now homeless, and they had over 500 emergency crew people trying to get that fire out for a long time. In Belgium last year, a regasified plant in Belgium put the LNG natural gas into a pipeline system, and there also was a construction accident. And the explosion there was so huge that the BBC reported debris from the initial explosion was found 4 miles away. And it incinerated a tremendous area, and many, many people were killed. Also, recently, they've determined that the liquefied natural gas, once it's regasified and put into our domestic pipeline systems on the East Coast in Washington County, they determine that it is shrinking and cracking rubber couplings that link the pipes. And there have been thousands of leaks, and a few houses have actually exploded in the past year and a half. So they did the investigation and determined that the liquefied natural gas, because of the nature of it going through the gasification and liquefaction, hydrocarbons are eliminated, and they are critical in order to keep the integrity of our domestic natural gas, and they've been causing pipes to leak. So there's a lot of danger underfoot that will be running through our neighborhoods. I want to put a little bit in perspective. You know, if people look at the film and see the Cleveland disaster, which looks like Dresden or Hiroshima, I want them to understand that it was 1 mile that was incinerated from this small tank, and that the tankers, a very typical tanker that will be bringing in LNG to your ports, hold 20 times the volume that incinerated 1 square mile.
Right, and using the excuse, oh, well, that was 60 years ago, works both ways because, yeah, 60 years ago, everything was a lot smaller scale. Things are a lot larger now, so you'd think that they would be more concerned now.
Yes, no one has criticized. When you were giving your introduction, you were talking about once it's liquefied, it's under very high pressure in the tanks.
Mm-hmm.
You're a little off on that. One thing is for sure, when it's stored in those tanks, it is at atmospheric pressure.
Okay. Thank you for the correction.
That's okay. And they always say, oh, and they criticize people, oh, there's no high pressure here, it's just atmosphere. Doesn't make a difference if it's under high pressure or atmospheric pressure. What it is, it's 600 condensed gallons. And just the weight of it itself sometimes produces heat within those tanks, and it starts expanding. And that expansion causes pressure. People have to also know it's merely cement, and they have a foam insulation, that this is nothing more than a thermos bottle to keep this LNG cooled. So as soon as it is heated, or if it is a breach, it instantaneously expands. And all you have between your community and complete disaster is this cement with a little bit of foam, and the foam is highly flammable.
My guest today has been Tim Riley. He is a trial lawyer and has produced a film called The Risks and Dangers of LNG. You can find out more about him and the issue of liquefied natural gas at his website, www.lngdanger.com. Thank you very much for being on the program this morning, Tim.
Andrew, my pleasure. We'll do it again if you like.
All right. Take care.
Take care of yourself. Bye.
And the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm. If you go to the program schedule, click Wednesday morning at 10, People Rise Up has links to Tim's information as well as many, many other sites connected to the issue of liquefied natural gas. There are two active proposals before the Oregon Energy Facility Siting Council to install liquefied natural gas facilities at Bradwood, Oregon, and Coos Bay, specific Jordan Cove at Coos Bay. St. Helens and a site in Astoria proper are also being considered. So there are two active proposals for potential sites here in Oregon. The People Rise Up website has a bunch of links to Oregon-specific information, daily Astorian columns, groups in Coos Bay and the Astoria areas, as well as statewide, links to the Oregon Energy Facility Siting Council, and opportunities for you to get involved in this process for siting. These are active and current, and you can have an impact at this point. If you have any questions or comments, you can send email to me at kboo@riseup.net. We'll be back next week with something else for you, and thank you very much for listening.